evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
We want everybody to come on the floor. Guys are right now on the floor.
Hey, it's another edition of the Vibe Collective here on CAUT 89.5 FM.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Oh. Can you not hear yourself?
No, it's fine though. I'll figure it out.
So right now we are Jams.
And this is your girl Meme, aka Kemba King.
And shouts to the rest of the crew.
Yeah, I heard the young boys are stuck in traffic, I don't know if they're going to make it.
Okay, and we are also waiting for Melinda, a.k.a. Docu Vixen, Adrian Worrell, and Victoria Grant.
Victoria, no, is out She's on assignment.
Yeah, see? You see? She's on assignment.
She's on assignment. Yes, yes.
So big shouts and lots of love to her.
And Luam.
And Luam, who is also on assignment today. Yeah, so we're the bare bones crew right now.
Yo, holding it down.
Holding it down. And this is an exciting day. It's too bad that you and I are the only witnesses to this. Because we're very happy to have our guest here today.
Thank you.
Junior T.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
We're good. How are you?
You know, I'm surviving, man.
Yeah, surviving this crazy weather.
Yeah, and like Manifesto Weekend's gotten off to a great start, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For partaking in this festivities and like, recovering from last night.
How was last night?
It was great, man. Really happy to see the city come out to support the Beat event. You know, I got to see my homeboy Rich Kid get it in. Sunclef, EQ. There's a lot of dope dudes from Toronto that are representing worldwide in this beat scene, and I'm proud to see these guys doing it so well. You know?
Yeah, and now I know that you just recently participated in a beat showcase.
Yes, I did.
At the Rivoli.
Yeah.
Yeah, so before we get into it, let's just, in case there are any listeners out there who are not familiar with you, let us introduce you proper.
Okay.
So, Junior T, you are a producer.
Yes, I am.
You are also a rapper.
Yes.
MC. Poet. A poet, for real, because your lyrics are nice.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. We appreciate your lyricism here on the show. And we've been playing you for a while, and you've done a lot of work over the last few years, sort of quietly like producing here and there, and then coming out with your team Smash Bros.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your history in this music biz?
Okay. Well, I've been writing and rhyming for a long time. I'd say like 10 years plus. Same thing for producing. And over like the last 2 to 3 years, I've actually really been focusing on the production because I feel like it was a skill set that I needed to sharpen up, and like really happy to have that council of team members, or just, you know, the steel sharpened steel effect that's took place over the last couple of years. And I've finally brought it to a level where I feel I could share it with other artists, and it's been really successful. So I'm just trying to keep it going, you know? As far as like the stuff I did this year and some production, I was lucky to do a whole project with Veronica Dominguez, who you could catch at Manifesto main stage tomorrow. I produced a whole record called Just Chill.
Awesome.
I also got to do some features with people across the border. I got to produce a couple of records for Grand Marshall, who's also on Fool's Gold, and another artist named DeLorean from Atlanta. And it's just been growing, and I'm just trying to keep it busy and working, you know?
Can you talk about, I remember for the first time when I went down to New York with Tanika.
That's
and
right.
We were at I think I was sober at this time, but we went to a couple different places. It was New Year's Eve, everybody. It was New Year's Eve. And the DJ, the mixing was like the different DJs that were there. It was just crap. And I was just like, and Tanika's like, we have something very special in Toronto. Like, we are very much treated by awesome DJs, awesome producers. Yeah. Can you talk about the, I guess, what has supported you in your work as a producer, or who or what has supported you?
Okay, I would say definitely the DJs. We are definitely spoiled out here. Because out here, the DJs, they blend. They mix their music.
Right?
And like we're so used to that that we don't recognize that it's not a norm everywhere you go. You know what I mean? And like, I was like, you know, kind of mentored by DJs in Toronto, to be real. Yeah. Like the first DJ to really take me under their wing was DJ Eloquence.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Oh.
For real.
Yeah. My big first, up DJ Eloquence.
Big up.
Yeah. I think the first radio show I ever did, I was like hella young. I was like 17. I snuck into like the Hooch, if you guys remember that back in the day. And I did my first show, and it was her and Plasma Crew. And then they brought me through when they were filling in for DTS Master Plan back in the day. And like ever since, they just like really supported their brother, you know. And I kind of learned from that to make sure that the DJs have the music first, because if they really enjoy it, they'll play it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
it's brought me here.
Just like to welcome to the stage Adrian Rora,
aka the resident feminist.
Word up.
Aka Griffin. So no Melinda with you?
Where
are you not coming from?
Let me check my pockets.
Okay.
We had a little thing with Saturday Morning Live, so I think she's just recuperating from that. She has a schedule that's, I think, quite
a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little
demanding.
Bit demanding, yeah. Okay.
So she's not reaching.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think she's probably sleeping.
Okay, shout out to Melinda then. Okay, so back to our discussion with Junior T here on the Vibe Collective. I'm interested in hearing about how you first got involved as an artist with music.
Okay.
Was it something that you started with a pen and a pad? Were you ciphering? Were you producing? What was your entry point?
I'm the son of a drummer. And my dad has like been really busy as a musician. I was lucky to have him take me around to like all of his rehearsals and stuff. And I guess that's where like the musical seed was planted first. I played drums for like 6 years in my church. And like I was always freestyling, but I really have to give it up to my cousin. He was like a beatboxer coming up, and he's like, yo, I need someone to rap to my beatbox. So like he kind of just volunteered me at a young age. So I started off with the freestyling thing. And then I really took it a little bit more serious when I finally had like a community of rappers that I met in high school. So fat shouts to my Clarkson team, you know what I mean? Kafrika, what's up? And it just kind of took off from there, you know what I mean? So freestyling was definitely my main thing. And then once I got into like producing, or I met people that were writing songs, that's when I learned how to like actually translate it to paper. Because I was just more about like spontaneous, getting an immediate reaction. But it took a while for me to actually turn it into songwriting, you know? Mm-hmm. So it started off with ciphering, met some writers, and then brought me here.
Nice. And so in terms of the content of your lyricism, oh, Melinda is in the house.
Look at that.
Yes.
Look at that. Okay.
We were debating whether or not you were going to be here. So, yes, welcome.
Melinda,
a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
Docu Vixen in the house.
Yes, yes. She's just going to get herself situated. Yeah. But in terms of your lyrical content, because I really appreciate the things that you say in your rhymes. Do you want to talk about what inspires you, what informs you, what are some of the things that you're thinking about? Is it a thought process? Is it just happening and those are the things that you're holding in your heart?
It's a balance of just a little bit of just lyrical exercise and just like expressing feelings. Mm. I think it's more about the expression of feelings, because when I first started writing, I was just like an MC, you know. It was all about the punchlines, the crazy rhyme schemes. And then after, like, you know, when we started getting closer to like the next Smash Brothers album, like Crook really put me on to like translating my life into the music. And I wasn't so good at that. He was really good at that. And like I just took a page out of his book. And I was going through a lot of things in life over the last 2-3 years. And I felt like that was really my only outlet. That's the first time in my life where I felt like my writing was my outlet. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'd been producing and I'd just been freestyling. And sometimes I'd just like, I'd put out my feelings in a freestyle and just let it go. but now I finally brought it to a point where I wrote about it in my songs, and it was almost like I'm writing a reminder to myself. Mm-hmm. The songs I've been making as of late, they've all been like reminders of how I should feel, what really matters to me. I was kind of selfish with my writing, to be real, but like that's what it's been. Mm-hmm. You know, like the recent song "You and I," it was just a, I really need to write a song to commemorate the mother of my daughter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's just how it happened. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to keep that trend going.
I was wondering to the extent to which like the change in rap's emotional range, because like, you know, in the quote unquote golden era, there wasn't much you could really rap about and still be cool. You know, like even though there was, you know, certain things were in the conversation, certain things weren't in the conversation, and like coming up through that era. Mm-hmm. How has that affected the way that you look at both rapping and producing in terms of this kind of broader emotional bandwidth?
I think it's really healthy. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for hip-hop because hip-hop's a really young genre as far as like how old it's been, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. For me, I appreciate the change because like I grew up listening to like Boot Camp, you know, a lot of like hardcore heads. But when as I've grown up, I realized they were actually saying a lot of real stuff despite like the having fun and the rapping, you know what I mean? You just need to be a better listener. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the new music has made it easier for a person to be a listener because you don't have to be so quick on your toes to like get the references and the metaphors. Because back then, like I remember my favorite song that actually changed my life was Respiration by Black Star. Mm-hmm. And there's so much undertones, and like if you're not listening for real, you'll miss it. If you're just listening to the words directly, that's one version of the song. But when you listen to the metaphors and what they're really visualizing and telling you in that song, yeah, that's what I really was aiming for. But like now, it's easier for people to get the song. Mm-hmm. And that's cool because more people can relate to the music now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There was an interesting article you just posted yesterday about the I think you posted sampling of hip-hop.
y'all know I post like 4,000
a day. Yeah.
But it's always you who's, we're talking about posted something.
Yeah.
It's never like us.
Yeah, that's right. So for those who couldn't see me pointing at Adrian. but it was an interesting article about how, because of how hip-hop has evolved, mm-hmm. and it's no longer using samples,
yeah.
That it's sort of diminished the intellect of the game because mm-hmm. it's not challenging people to look to the past. It's not challenging right. people to... So as a producer,
yeah.
what are your thoughts on you know, sampled hip-hop versus... I don't even want to say versus because I don't think they necessarily have to go against each other. But right. What do you think about that? What do you think about sampling and what it's done for artists in terms of their knowledge of music?
I think for the producers that grew up in that era or still appreciate that layer of it, it's very important. I think because in hip hop, we have this weird stigma where we don't really pay homage to like the forefathers of the mm-hmm. game. And most other genres, like if you listen to rock music, you're an idiot if you don't know what Stairway to Heaven is, you know what I mean? But when it comes to hip-hop, if you don't know like Rapper's Delight, it's okay. You know what I mean? But for the producer, I feel like the more you're into digging, even if you don't play an instrument, you have a greater appreciation for what it takes to make great music, and your palette for music is a lot broader, I find, because digging has brought me to some great musicians that I wouldn't have found otherwise. Like I'm listening to Cassiano, who's like a crazy Brazilian singer that made soul in Spanish, you know what I mean? I'm listening to German funk, I'm listening to Swedish funk, you know what I mean? Because of what I like to sample, and it's just good. I feel it's healthy to have a good round understanding or just music in your catalog or on your iPod or on your computer, because that music will be gone because some of that did not get translated to MP3. Like if you have it in hard copy, not everybody's going to take the time to share that music. Some people might be selfish and keep that. You know what I mean? Like there's records that I'm still looking for to this day that you can't find online on a torrent or whatever. Like you need that tangible. But yeah, you need to go to the past to appreciate what we're listening to now. Mm-hmm. You know?
And then what do you think about how hip-hop has evolved outside of sampled music?
I think it's good because mm-hmm. it's made more musicians out of the hip-hop producers. Mm-hmm. Even myself, it's actually evolved me from a beat maker to a real producer, actually, because I'm working on a project with Guzo Lu from the Juice Money Collective. I'm performing with on Sunday. You know what I mean?
Love and those guys.
They're so dope. And we're doing this live beat tape where I sampled stuff to make the beats originally, and then we completely redid the soundscape live. So I had to like coordinate with the musicians, bring them into the studio, track them one by one, and that just gave me a whole different appreciation for the process. Because when you're making everything by yourself, it seems so easy and linear, but when you've got to coordinate 8 musicians and have them learn music, or sometimes you got to make sheet music so they can play, like, it's a whole different ball game. And like, it really makes me appreciate dudes like Quincy Jones that's like dealing with 60-piece orchestras. You know what I mean?
Right. But, I mean, that was part of the reason sampling came in, though, right? Because it's like hip-hop, there wasn't always access to all those all that music or those musicians. So it's like, you know what, you get this one machine, and it doesn't, obviously doesn't like replicate all of that, but it like, you know, it cuts the cost down, it cuts the headache down. I had a friend who had a studio, and he was like, sometimes getting musicians on the same page is like herding cats, because everybody...
And you have to pay everybody, too,
and you got
to
pay everybody.
That's the other thing.
No, but then, you know, a sampler doesn't have the same ego as your bass player. By now, right?
That's true. But Juice Money Collective, I want to get back to them, because Melinda and I saw, in my opinion, the best show of the summer, which was Smash Brothers and Rich Kid at Wrong Bar, which is Money Collective.
Yeah.
And it was just so, I mean, as a musician, I really appreciate when there are musicians on stage, especially in hip hop. And it translated really well. And you could tell, like, Rich Kid was a little bit like, okay, you're going to play my music then. But it was, those guys are really tight, first of all. Those are some serious musicians in that band.
It was cool because like they're young musicians, because it takes time to master an instrument. And to see like young dudes that really take the craft that seriously and just enjoy the music, it was great. Like even in the rehearsal, because I produced a lot of the Smash Brothers stuff we performed, and I'm hella picky. You know, because I've been working with bands, and I kind of have an expectation of what I want it to sound like. So the whole communication and getting it to where we wanted it to be was actually really easy, because they connected with the music, they understand the hip hop, and they actually listened to the music. It was cool, you know? I've had other experiences with musicians where, you know, I like to use certain jazz tones, and maybe the keyboardist may not be able to hear those jazz harmonies, and they're playing like the right key per se. Maybe it's an E, but maybe I want like a E flat minor or major. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was really lucky to work with guys that were in the same vein and vibe as far as like the style of music they like to play. So it was a great marriage, you know what I mean? To have a Rich Kid and then us rock with those guys. It was really fun.
I hope to see more of that.
I'm happy about Sunday. I get to rock with them solo, being real like selfish Grinch style. You know what I mean? Got them all to myself.
That's gonna be, what time are you on, do you know?
I'm on at 3:40.
Okay.
Main stage manifesto.
And
I'm doing some exclusive stuff that's never been heard. Trying it out for the first time. We'll see how that goes.
On Sunday. On Sunday. Okay.
As in tomorrow, Sunday.
Yes.
That is tomorrow. You heard it right here on the Vibe Collective. Everybody, Junior T, tomorrow at Manifesto.
3:40, come through.
Okay. Yeah. So now getting back to the album that you just produced. I'm just trying to pull it up here.
Veronica Dominguez.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what the sound is, and then maybe we'll run one of the tunes?
That project was like a my first real passion project. I actually kind of scouted her, actually. My friend Javid, that works at the Loft, he had an opportunity for me to be like the program coordinator for the studio there. So I took the job, but prior to taking the job, I was scouting Veronica on Facebook, because she was competing in this Omni One singing contest, and she ended up winning, and went for my first day at the job, and she was at the center. I'm like, what are you doing here? She's like, oh, I go here. I'm like, wow. So from the contest, she actually got a record contract or an opportunity to do an album, but that administration didn't do it for like a whole year and a half. And I was just trying to be patient, you know, I didn't want to intervene. And then she approached me like, let's do a whole album, because you've been wanting to do this forever. And it took us like a year and a half to do the whole project. And then it was just great, you know. I brought through my friend Octavio Santos, who did all the like the live horn arrangements. So I needed to give it that texture to really make it sound authentic, authentic soul in my eyes. It was fun to actually do some sampling and to do some like original productions on there too. It was just an overall great experience. Fat shout outs to Remix for housing the whole project. It was really fun, man. You know what I mean?
Dope. So we're going to play Just Chill. And is this the single from the album?
It's one of the singles. Yeah, the titled record. Yeah.
Okay.
And this is one of the songs where I didn't sample anything. This is Junior on the keys and the bass and everything.
Oh, okay. Well, get ready, everybody. Turn it up.
We all sit up.
Yes. So the track is by Veronica Dominguez with Junior T on the keys and drums and all them things here on the Vibe Collective CAUT 89.5 FM.
Membership Drive is happening October 21st through the 27th. Become a member before October 20th and you will be entered into a special early bird draw for a Samsung Galaxy Note. For more information and to become a member, visit www.ciut.fm. CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city.
Enjoy a relaxing getaway in a waterfront cottage in Muskoka at Foxwood Resort. Picturesque and peaceful, you can hear the quiet at Foxwood. Fall specials are now available. Visit www.foxwoodresort.ca or call 1-866-919-3933. The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. One,
Okay, Vibe Collective, CIUT
89.5. How you doing?
Just a little technical difficulty there. Okay, this is Jams, and joining me in studio,
Kemba King, a.k.a. Meme.
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
Adrian Worrell, a.k.a. Griffin.
Yes, yes, we are the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. Shouts to Luam and Victoria Grant, and special shouts to our guests.
Yes, Junie T, one half of the Smash.
Yeah, yeah. So the track you heard before the break was produced by Junie T. The keys were nice.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
The instrumentation was very, very nice. The whole track produced by you, Veronica Dominguez, is the artist. And what's her story besides being a contest?
Well, you know what? She's just like a really dedicated person. Like when I met her, I could already tell how serious she was about her music. And that's all I really wanted to work with, is someone that's equally passionate about music. And it was just good to meet somebody that's young that also has the same intensity. And like she's really, really working hard. She rehearses hard. She writes hard. And that's all I really wanted to see. And it was a blessing because it came to fruition and still moving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I shout to Veronica. Probably rehearsing right now for tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
Getting back to your work with Smash Brothers, because you've got, you guys have two albums.
Three, actually.
Three albums.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Three albums.
Smash.
Yeah. And you guys have been working together for a few years now.
Oh, yeah. At least, like, almost a decade now.
So do you want to talk about the evolution of Smash Brothers?
It's been interesting, man. We're a part of a team called 3-5 Play. It's more like a family. Couple DJs, couple MCs. And then in Saga, actually, we ended up being a part of this big collective called Western Union back in the day, because we felt like we needed to kind of, you know, power in numbers. And it had, like, members like Arthur MacArthur, Big Pops, Rich Kid. Like, it just brought everybody in Saga together. And post that experience, that taught us a lot as far as, like, what we need to do to grow the brand long term. And we just applied it to every record we did after that. So we put out the Nintendo Wii version, which is, like, the Smash Brothers EP. And then that was, like, some learning and lessons. And then we applied what we learned from that to the most recent release, which is Think It's a Game. And we finally got some international buzz and support off that. We got some airplay in UK, LA, Atlanta, France, Brazil. It was just cool to see that, like, music can touch people all over the world, even if they don't understand the language. It's just beautiful.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Can you talk about what you learned? You mentioned that you learned from the Wii album.
Yeah. Okay. With that album, we learned that presentation is important. You know, so when we did that whole case like that, for people that didn't know us at all, they were willing to give us a chance because they saw that we took our craft that seriously, that we're willing to give it a good package, you know? And after that, we kind of realized that we needed to apply this administrative stuff that we weren't doing, which is like building a mailing list or a blog list or some kind of a online way to connect with our listeners and also the people that do the press thing. And a lot of it was just the whole campaign. The idea of a campaign was completely foreign to us for so long. And we finally got to apply that with how we released all the music from the videos to the singles. And it's really a business. We were completely unaware of how much of a business it was, away from just creating the music, but how you get it to the people is really like business like. There's formalities to that. There's no rules really, but you got to have an idea of how you want to do it. So we had to, you know, sit there, brainstorm, a lot of planning, a lot of meetings, and then just actually executing what you intended to do was like a lot of what we learned with the last album, especially.
I feel like the artists that we've had on, the MCs, the rappers.
Yeah.
Nobody says MCs anymore, I was told. The rappers.
Yeah.
That have been on our show in 2013 have really talked about the hustle, right? Like, and how that's where the profit has really come from. And just thinking about what you just spoke about in relation to the business versus the art, how do you stay focused in making sure that you're committed and equally invested, or invested proportionately in both the art and the business of it?
It's like a seesaw, really, especially when you're doing a lot of the business stuff yourself. There was a time where, like, I felt I couldn't even be creative because my mind was so saturated with thinking about, okay, who am I going to send this out to? what's going to be the structure and the timeline of what it is. But once you've done it once, it's not such a strain on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like anything. Once you've done it once, you kind of have a grasp for it. Mm-hmm. And then you could kind of get back to being creative. Because even that in itself is an experience that you may need to express in a song. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you just got to make sure that you at least finish what you start. You know, if you're going to do the business thing yourself before you employ somebody, fully see it through, because it's important things to know, because eventually it's going to be too much going on that you need to have somebody else do it. But it's good to know what they are doing so they won't do the job like not according to your liking or how it should be done. You know what I mean? I'm a firm believer knowing as much as you can about the business so no one can pull the wool over your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because we've heard many stories of artists getting messed up with contracts or somebody or promoter not doing the job right. Because you don't
rule
know.
Number 4,080.
Yeah, for real. So I encourage any artist that's doing it, as much as it may be tiring, just learn as much as you can about the business, even if you don't want to be the one to do all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just be aware.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how, as an artist, learning the business, did you have a mentor? Were you looking at what other people have done? Because this decade has been a real shift in terms of shifting of power to independent artists because
yeah.
of things like the internet and the ability to distribute your own music
right.
on your own terms. Can you talk about some of the influences for your business set?
My business set? It started really with the DJs actually coming to the radio shows and seeing how they were servicing the music. And then it kind of... Big shout outs to DJ Nana, man. He kind of took me under his wing to teach me like how to put together like an event. And then doing events actually opened my eyes to the structure overall.
Because
I learned how to promote an event, whether it's something as simple as flyering, to going to a whole bunch of radio shows, like all the leading weeks up to the event, even just to the numbers of an event. That taught me a lot. Post that, my next real mentor, and still is my mentor, is Addy Papa, which is like Rich Kid's manager. He's taught me a lot with like the formalities of the business and knowing how to build real relationships and how to nurture them and apply them to your intention, you know. And for a lot of those artists out there, don't think staying in your house is the best thing to do all the time if you're on your own. You need to build those relationships personally in order to apply them, you know. This whole new age where it's all internet and like you know, tweeting, it's cool because you can meet some people you could never have met before, you know what I mean. I've had friends that have linked up with artists strictly off of the whole Twitter thing. Shouts out to Lord Quest. That's how we connected with Schoolboy Q, believe it or not. He ended up producing on his first mixtape strictly off of Twitter, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's possible, but for him to make that relationship real, you have to go to LA
right.
and meet the person, you know what I mean?
And be able to talk and articulate himself.
Mm-hmm. Makes a big difference, you know?
Definitely, yeah.
I just wanted to talk, just about the internet kind of thing and the connections. I think the internet kind of has opened up, but it's sort of like, you know, a window to your audience or, you know, the people you want to connect with.
Yeah.
But you still have to, like, you know, spend real time to create the art or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to add to this was like what I interviewed this one MC. He was from New Orleans,
yeah.
And he like opened my mind to like you know, a new way of like marketing your, you know, your art was like every artist should have their own app. And I was like, oh my God, that's so brilliant. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Have your own, you develop your own app so that, you know, you can send out to whoever, like, you know, signs up to your app.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the new wave now.
Yeah.
App.
I was like blown away by that. Who do I talk to about that?
Yeah. You know what? There's a lot of different services for the whole app thing, because I've been looking into it. You could either make one yourself, or like Reverb Nation's got ways to make apps. A lot of these like social networks that service artists are now starting to lean towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still like a traditionalist. Like, I like to have my mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to just meet the people that listen to my music. Like, I still have a normal Facebook page. I don't have an artist Facebook page, because I like to be able to talk to the people that listen
right.
to my music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Say hi, how you doing? I mean, that stuff's important, like that personal connection. And that will never change in any business. You've got to have a connection with the people you're doing business with and the people that are consuming whatever it is you have as a product is still important in my eyes.
I want to ask you a personal question. You mentioned you have a daughter.
Yeah.
And something we talk a lot about on the show, we talk about a lot of things. We try and have critical discussions about stuff, even stuff we love like hip hop.
Yeah.
And so one of the conversations that is sort of ongoing is how sometimes as women, when you're listening to hip hop and you're a hip hop head, you are compromised. You feel compromised because a lot of the lyrics are not always celebrating women as powerful creatures, but maybe looking at women as objects. What are your thoughts about that? First of all, as an artist, also as a father of a daughter, and do you think that that is influencing
my writing?
You're thinking on those lines.
You know what?
That you have a daughter.
Funny enough, I was raised by like a lot of women. I've always had like sisters, people that really mean a lot to me. So in my music, I've never really had those kind of moments. But what really trips me out is like the consumers of that music, because women actually buy most of that misogynistic music. Like, it used to bother me when girls would be like, "Oh, this stuff's so misogynistic," and then they turn on the radio and they're playing 2 Chainz. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I just listen to what I feel is like healthy for my mental diet. You know what I mean? I will never discriminate against anybody else's experience in their music, because it may be very real to them. You know what I mean? And there's so many layers of life where that's just a reality. So for me to judge someone for them putting it in their music, it's not really fair. And if somebody thinks that it's not quality for them to take that in, then don't buy it. Don't listen to it. But I just don't think it's fair to criticize something if you don't really know where it's coming from. You know what I mean? For me as a dad, before I had my daughter, that's just how I wrote, you know, because I've been raised by so many women that I felt that I can't really talk about them that way, because that's not my life experience with women. It's been very different. So I just try to make sure that my music's an accurate reflection of how I've been living. So that's just for me personally. But for anybody else that writes their music, whatever, that could be very real to them. So to respect that. But
I just want to challenge you for a bit. So if someone is talking about a personal experience where they maybe have not had a healthy relationship with a woman, and they talk about this character in a certain type of way, I can appreciate not knowing where that comes from, but I guess maybe the blatant use, and I'm in no way, I don't believe in censorship either, and and there are times where I listen to music that is not necessarily healthy, but when we look at kind of a lack of discernment with terms like can't use it on the radio. Save that for the second hour. Like,
you can say it for the context of the discussion.
Oh, okay, great. Bitches or hoes and stuff like that. Yeah. That's a very generalization against women. So is there a way in which you can make a judgment about the use of those terms as opposed to a particular narrative that is being put forth by an artist?
I just feel like the words that use are, it's a part of the emotion that's being expressed, I feel. Like, choice of words, being a writer myself. So that writer may find it very important to get their idea across through those words, you know? Even though some people may be offended by them, but it's just the English language. You have a variety of words you can use, and that might be the most accurate for them to get the feeling and the idea across. You know what I mean? For anybody, you know, some people might use something that's even more clever that could even be even more offensive, but you may not know what the word means. You know what I mean? It's just all about the artist. And I feel like if anyone feels offended by the music, just change your musical diet. That's just always been my solution for that. And if you enjoy the music, enjoy it. That's it.
It's also those terms, it's like, talk about particular kinds of behaviors.
Right. Know? That's very true.
What?
No. I agree with you. I agree with you.
No, real talk. Like, yeah, it's a certain kind of behavior. But I think what the issue is with rap is that you don't have that balance. Like, that's the only kind of behavior that gets narrated in rap songs oftentimes, right? Predominantly.
I just pulled this card. It's fine. It's done. No. Once a month, I have to just pull it back.
Every month.
Could you maybe elaborate on what you mean?
Could you get yourself into more trouble, Adrian? Please.
No, I feel
gladly,
well.
Gladly. Well, I think. Oh, geez, how can I say that? Surrounded, I feel the daggers, the pressure.
Hey, no, listen,
like,
hey.
The B word. It's like someone who's. Y'all ready?
we're all waiting.
Tell them what it is.
But it's someone who like is kind of like power tripping on a sense. Like that's kind of what the word means, right? Is that right. It's very specific.
Yeah.
And like also if
power
you want
tripping.
Yeah.
If you want to get the analogy even like more graphic.
No, I started with my mouth open.
I'm gonna leave that one alone.
Yeah.
Okay, if I could just
hold on,
let me finish.
Okay. I'm getting there. Okay, and also like if you look at the imagery of like two dogs doing it and like how dogs get stuck. I'll let y'all figure that out yourself. But then it's like the other.
I don't know where you were going with
let's let it finish.
Oh, like two dogs stuck. Like what happened? You ever see like two dogs get stuck? Like what? That's what happens in that. Nobody, no one's ever heard about two dogs getting stuck during intimate act.
No.
It's like just kind of like using sex as a trap.
Oh wow! Here we go with this conversation.
But that's part of what the term implies.
Yeah.
I think that I'm just going to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead.
That I think that I can appreciate the use of certain terms if it's using a gender neutral thing, and I think when we fall into the trap of certain type of women fall into this label, you know, like the whole I'm not talking about the queens, I'm talking, you know, it kind of allows for a one-dimensional understanding of what and who people are and over-determination, right? So, and I will respectfully disagree with your point.
There's different types of women
that fit into a person who's a hoe or who's a.
I'll say that. I said behaviors. You just flipped it to people fitting into.
Well,
that.
I mean, there'd be okay.
What you're saying makes some sense, but it's really just a choice of word. Like, I mean, you have to also recognize the artist that's using the word. Like, for example, I used to hate on some South music for the longest time, like hard, as far as like what the popular music is. And then my friends went down to Atlanta for A3C last year. And they were like, when you go to Atlanta and then you listen to the music, you'll get it. You know, it's a part of the culture. It's a lifestyle that's out there. There's like a lot of people, like going to the strip club over there is like bigger than going to the club out there. Mm-hmm. So when they're referring to like hoes and strippers, it's because that's actually a part of the daily lifestyle per se. So for someone coming from an environment that's not like that, I could understand where there's like a misunderstanding of the music or the context of the music. So that's why I just say you got to really just listen to the music as far as who the artist or the person is and what it is they're really living in. Because sometimes it's not really about them glorifying something. It's just accurate reflection of what they're living.
I think, you know what I mean? I just to further critique it, though, I think the issue that I can't speak for all of us here, but the issue that I might have with some of that kind of storytelling is that it's from a very superficial dimension. So it's not looking at the history of, you know, why are people participating in the sex trade or in sex work? Why do they have to do that?
Right.
What kind of childhood did they have, like the backstory there? It's a diminishment of a person into a very particular stereotype.
Yeah,
right.
But I also don't want to take away from the fact that there are people regardless of gender who make choices to be involved in sex trade work,
right.
Yeah, and it's how do we allow us to self-identify and have labels that we agree with, right? So I mean, if someone wants to be called a hoe, I think that's your right to. And I guess maybe it's getting more of an understanding of how do women feel about being called hoes and the men who are. And this is very, looking at this in a very problematic, heteronormative, dichotomous way, but like men using terms against women that they don't necessarily feel like they want to be addressed with. So that's I guess where I'm coming from.
Well, you know what's interesting on that whole note is that right now I'm kind of tripped out with this whole ratchet word. Ratchet has got
me
really
too
big.
Same.
Like it's actually popular, like people like being ratchet. Do you get what I'm saying? Like girls like, oh, I'm gonna be ratchet tonight. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like on the same conversation, well, bitches or hoes or whatever, it's that word is exactly the same thing in
ratchet,
my eyes.
Ratchet.
And now it's like it's a popular thing, it's a theme. And it's partly the fault of the machine. I'm just like aware of that because like you're not gonna hear Respiration on Flow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not gonna hear Faithful by Common on like these popular stations where they're talking about real emotions and like identifying with people. So it's partly the machine's fault, but also the consumer. You know what I mean? You gotta, people make their own choices. Yeah. So if you're gonna listen to the music and apply it to your life, you're making this music that's apparently not cool popular. So, you know, you made your bed, lay in it. You know what I mean? Definitely. That's why I feel. My mom's always said, if you don't hear, you must feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just how it goes. So, you know, if you want to listen to better music, listen to better music.
And, like, you know, to my point, was like, but to my
but
point,
she never got to finish.
Not entirely. But it was like, you know, there's a range of music out there, right? But what comes to the what comes to the focus oftentimes is this controversial stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To a degree, or these things that are going to provoke these certain kind of reactions. But it's kind of like, there are rap songs out there that are, you know, intelligent and look at women's lives in a multidimensional way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to be what people really want to support in the kind of way that, you know, the feeds the machine. So it's like, what we end up having is, you know, these other types of like spectacles and scandals and controversies.
But you know, further to that, we can't exclude who's running the machine, the connections that the machine has to things like the prison industrial complex, and also just the general sort of white supremacy of the machine and how it assigns people to a very particular role and glorifies that. And so you have that Miley Cyrus friggin' Robin Thicke fiasco type of thing that goes on that really, you know, it's like, oh, let's be ratchet on stage tonight.
But like, you know, I looked at that as a critique in a sense. Like I didn't actually watch the whole damn thing because it was, to me, there was just too much creepy happening, like with the whole pedo bear type of thing, and she's in pigtails, and it's like, yeah, like I'm gonna need like weeks of therapy after watching this, right? Yeah. But like from what I saw, it was kind of like, this is what you guys have turned the music into.
Right.
You know, that was kind of this.
Well, look at Pharrell and
preemptively suing Marvin Gaye's
like
estate.
What the?
Wow.
But that's what it is, right? So it's kind of like, you know, again, to Junior's point, it's kind of like, yes, the system, the machine's there, and it's like, you know, it creates these incentives and these pressures, but like, who really feeds the machine? And like, moments like that whole Miley Cyrus thing gave me a second to be like, well, how exactly did we get here again, you know? So it's like, as messed up as that was on so many different layers, there's also a chance to kind of check the game itself. It's like, yo, what are we really doing? And you know, Melinda just made the point, it's like the artist has more power than ever, you know. Before I remember, you know, back in the day in what year can
1996,
thank you, you know, like trying to get your music out, it was crazy, like to get into a studio, to get you, it was a whole complex process. You can now do this from your house, you can send it around to people you know, you build your list, etc.
Yeah, so when Spade was here, he was telling us how much did he spend on his
$165,000 on an album.
$85,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
$85,000.
It was $85,000.
A lot of damn money on an album.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you can make an album, a really good one, for a tenth of that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Very true.
And you can distribute it and everything. So it's like, it's not quite the same kind of pressure, same kind of investment. So it's kind of like, why is it that we are still having some of these same topics?
And why are people still watching the VMAs? Like, please.
I also want to say that most of the people who are financially investing in mainstream hip hop music are white males.
Right.
Right? So it's not necessarily.
No, I think it's white women, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've been
white
corrected.
White people.
It's so different now, man.
Right? So, I mean, if it's the ways in which. It's the ways in which black people of color are being consumed through hip hop music, and people are being able to live vicariously through the other, right? And I don't know how we got onto this.
No, it's an important part of the greater discussion of where music is today.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
And that's why I like supporting local people, you know?
Yeah. You know, and big up this radio show, Vibe Collective, because you guys are giving people an option to have different music in the diet. And I feel like that's the new challenge, really, with the saturation and the freedom of the internet. It's harder to find that good music. You got to actually make an effort. It's not like how it used to be, where you could just watch the mix. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And just like, we put on to what was good. No, for real though.
Shout
you know
out
what
Master
I mean?
T.
Yeah, big shout. You know. Yeah. So like nowadays, you gotta know about like Two Dope Boys, or you gotta check for like a DJ booth, or you gotta be in the know. Like if you want a better musical diet, you just gotta find like the sources that are gonna be reliable to keep giving you that good.
Yeah.
You know. So like, big ups to you guys and. people that do things like this to give people those choices to have like better music in their diet. You know what I mean?
Thank you for that. And big ups to you again. You know, for, as I said before, you know, the reason why we wanted to have you on the show is because we appreciate you not only as a producer, but as a lyricist.
Thank you.
And the content of your lyricism. It's deep. It's poetic and it's not towing that line, which is why we like you. Why
Thank
we
you.
You.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. It's a challenge, man. It's a challenge.
Do you feel that that is something that you're going to be able to sustain as you continue to evolve as an artist?
Yeah, but I'm also gonna like challenge the lines of my listeners for real. Mm-hmm. I feel the need to with this new music that I'm putting out, because like yeah, that on the same conversations, some of those people would be like, yeah, I don't like listening to ratchet music, but that's the first thing they got on the radio, mm-hmm. and then I'm like, yo. I'm going to write a ratchet song. Like, no, Junior, you can't do that. You're a nice guy. I'm like, what? Is that going to tell me right now? I'm like, all right, let me challenge that. Like, yeah, I'm really going to challenge the lines this year, like, on that note. Because, like, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, nice.
And that, I mean, that's part of like, rap to a degree, where it's like, these are personas, you know? Like, yeah. Rappers often confuse themselves and their listeners, I think, by like, yo, I'm so real, that kind of thought. But it's like, this is a persona. It's just somebody who you made up recording a song. It's storytelling.
Yeah,
you know, and like part of it is like, how are you going to get people to listen? How are you going to get people to react? And it's like, people aren't reacting to like conscious stuff. Then it's kind of like the rapper's job. I'm running out of why do I do air quotes when I'm on the radio?
You do that every show.
Every show.
There are four other people in the room with you. So.
Thank you. Yeah, for vouching. Yeah. So it's like. What was I saying?
Personas.
Yes, personas. And it's like, it's their job, in a sense, to get people interested, to get people's reaction, mm-hmm. right? And so whatever it is that does that to a degree, as your rapper, that's kind of your job to become that, you know?
Word. And I just feel like a lot of the new listeners really disregard the reality in hip-hop. Mm-hmm. They really do. Like, the world's a crazy place. You know what I mean? So when you're hearing about, like, you know, extreme situations or lifestyles, even though you may personally not know somebody living like that, people are, you know? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, you know, my music personally, it's that way because that's how I'm living. You know what I mean? And for the, like, music that's going to be coming out with me challenging people, like, listeners, like, it's still my life. You know what I mean? It depends on how you want to write it, from which angle you want to write it, and what kind of dialogue are you trying to provoke.
But that's what makes a great storyteller, right? Even if I have no idea what your life experience is like, if you write that in a way that I can say, ah, that's Junior's life, and I can appreciate what I can take from that, then it doesn't matter how, I guess, gory or gruesome or even mm-hmm. maybe the problematic language, because I can see how genuine it is, right? So if you're using the term like bitch in your music, I can appreciate it's not just the storytelling but the art within it, right? But I think it's kind of some of like the flagrancy, which is
but that's what it's all about, shock value, man. Like anything that sells nowadays is it's always been extreme, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's the nature of man.
And diversity, like, we do need. I really feel, again, you know, my I really started listening to rap back in like 86, 87, 88.
Yeah.
And like, when you had females, you had like female rappers to, you know, and they told their story. They answered back if somebody said the B word or called them this, like, you know, the real Roxanne. Yeah. Like, that was part of the kind of the back and forth. Like, you know, you're not going to say that. This is actually who you really are. You know, and like, there was this back and forth, and you had like a range of female images within rap, you know, that would counter some of those things. But we don't seem to have that in the same way now, or it's, you know, more dispersed. But you still have, you know, the B records coming out, mm-hmm. and hopefully we see a change in like more female artists being represented and representing themselves.
No, there are some really dope ones that I check for. Mm-hmm. Like, big shout out to Phoenix Pagliacci.
Yes. Angel Hayes.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
A Harmony.
Harmony's dope, you know what I mean? And even on like the international scale, like there's like Rhapsody, you could listen to.
Rhapsody.
She's really dope. You
is
know
Jean
Grey
ever going to release that album?
I know. Like, come on, Jean Grey. Yeah, stop being so funny on the internet and drop
She's doing a web series.
Oh, is she?
She's filming a web series.
But that's not an album, though, is it?
Again, that's her. She's hella funny.
Yeah. And she's a comedian. Yeah.
She is. She's so funny.
Jean Grey. Last shout out to Jean Grey.
Yeah. And Latasha, what's her? Isender.
Oh, where?
Latasha Isender.
Oh, yeah,
New
yeah,
York.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So there is like there is that music out there, but like what we're all dealing with is just, you know, the machine versus the people. If you want to get that good, good, you just got to do your homework. That's just all it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Can't expect the machine to feed you some good stuff.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
And stop watching the machine.
Stop watching. But criticize the machine. Like sometimes we have to look back. Like I didn't watch the VMAs. I saw it on the YouTube thing. I forced myself to watch it because I wanted to understand what was happening. Well, I wanted to know what happened, and it was sickening and disgusting, but then we can critique it, right? Then we can have the
conversation to me has been amazing, like how we've completely talked around, like I don't know if you remember the whole Whoopi Goldberg Ted Danson thing back in 92.
Yes, when she he went in blackface.
He showed up in blackface at like a roast and she was just like, oh my god. And like Robin Thicke is married to Paula Patton, and like that was a full on minstrel show.
Yeah.
And nobody's really said, so Paula, like,
Oh, she said she's fine with it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, because that was my first thing.
She gave him the pass.
And it took him 3 weeks to be like, you know, we fully knew what we were doing, him and Miley, and it's entertainment.
They said they were going to be making history.
Yeah.
And they did. They
but she took the fall for, like, the first 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, that she did. Yeah, he was not critiqued at all for that.
Yeah.
Who, Miley Cyrus?
Miley Cyrus took the fall for the whole thing.
And, like, I don't know, for me, like, there's, like, one real adult up there, like, you know. Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know.
We're not going to have a chance to talk about Julie Chen.
Who?
From the talk, you know, you said we would talk about it on the show, doing her eye surgery. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, yes, word, okay.
Sorry.
We are at the end of the hour. We'll have to. We'll come back on the other side of the music, but we do got to get to the music because that's what the listeners expect and want and appreciate. Okay. I'm not sure if you're able to stick around.
Yeah, I'm going to stick around.
Okay. So we're going to run some tunes to move you, get you moving on this very rainy Saturday. And it is. It's weird weather. Junior and I had the weather conversation when he first arrived.
It's the first day of autumn.
Oh, that's real. That's right. It's equinox. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's all yellow kinds of everything today.
Harvest moon. Y'all kind of mind.
No, it's yellow moon, no?
I can't keep track of these things. I know the moon was big this week.
It was. It's a full moon today.
Yeah. Shout out to Luxota, Grandmother Moon. Okay, so we're going to get to some tunes. You're listening to The Vibe Collective. We've been chatting with Junior T.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to get to some tunes, as I keep saying. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for tunes here on The Vibe Collective, CAUT 89.5 FM.
Always wanted to know what our most politically powerful women really think? Listen in to Three Women, the show that features women like Kathleen Wynne, Peggy Dash, Kristen Wong Tam, Christine Elliott, and your host, Sherry DeNovo.
Every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Enjoy a relaxing getaway in a waterfront cottage in Muskoka at Foxwood Resort. Picturesque and peaceful, you can hear the quiet at Foxwood. Fall specials are now available. Visit www.foxwoodresort.ca or call 1-866-919-3933.
Do you, like Albert Einstein, believe that imagination is more important than knowledge? Do you need a way to stretch your boundaries and explore your artistic edge? Then Harthouse has just the thing you need. Each term, we offer a series of creative classes in filmmaking, photography, and theatrical arts taught by some of the top artists in their craft. From finding your public speaking voice, to learning how to use your new camera, to writing your very first screenplay, Harthouse's creative classes inspire the imagination and enrich the mind. Visit harthouse.ca for class descriptions and schedules.
Did you know you can listen to CIUT 5 different ways? Online, on satellite TV, digital cable, on FM radio, and on the go. Find CIUT online at iTunes Radio under Campus University, or go to the live stream at www.ciut.fm. You can also locate us on satellite at Star Choice Channel 826, Rogers Digital Cable Channel 946, and Bell 5 Channel 970. Listen to us on the go with TuneIn Radio's free app. And don't forget, we're on the FM dial at 89.5 FM. Spread the word. The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5 FM.